Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Live. I am your host, Mike Brown, H3 Buddha. We've been off for a long time, Brett. Looking forward to getting back into some fights. I'm here with my good friend, Brett Apley, otherwise known as DB Bomb. Man, how do you survive with this nearly month off? Did you make it? Are you here?
Barely. I mean, I can't quite remember what happened during the last month. I kind of feel like I blacked out, but somehow we've gotten through it. There's, I think, only 1 week off of MMA the rest of the year. A lot of good cards. There's going to be a lot of big prize pools. It's just going to get progressively bigger and bigger as we get toward December. Obviously, next week's a big card, 215, I believe. There's two title fights there. This card is not the best. half the fights were scrapped due to injury, so we got really odd matchups all over the card. But it's a fight pass card. That means quick timing. Saturday morning, I always like that. So, you know, NFL is back in season. There's going to be a lot of new players hopefully coming into MMA. It's something I'm looking forward to. So this is just a nice card to get our feet wet, I think, and I'm definitely happy to have MMA back.
Yeah, I think the really good thing is that they got that 215 pricing out like a week ago, I feel. And that is that, and the prizes are getting bigger. And I think that exactly, we're going to get some more people over into MMA. And I guess the other thing would be just John Jones getting busted again. That's probably the biggest news that we had coming out of it.
Yeah, I can't say I'm shocked. I made my feelings clear about that guy. And I guess, I said some things right after it happened. We'll wait to see his B sample will come out. But I don't know. You hear every time someone gets popped, absolutely no idea how this could have happened. And like, in some cases, that's true. But it's frustrating when you hear it every single time. And like 90% of the time, they're, you know, he's probably been cycling for years, honestly, but I don't know. We'll see. It obviously sucks for the UFC, sucks for John Jones, sucks for Daniel Cormier, sucks for the fans, but we'll see what happens once more news comes out on that front.
Yeah, especially because they're looking for a star right now. They're looking for somebody to carry them with Conor doing whatever the heck he's doing. So that was fun too. We had the McGregor Mayweather boxing. I hope everyone didn't get trapped and tried to go with the MMA guy. I know a lot of people that took the right spot. What do we have to look forward to for content? I know that there's potentially some new content on the marketplace.
Yeah, there's some new content. I've been looking to get – I've been on the betting side of MMA for a long time now, but obviously DK has been my focus and – but for the last like year and a half, I've been tracking my bets publicly. I've been trying to get more and more into that side of things because I still think there's a huge edge in betting MMA. But I didn't want to just throw it into the premium content like right away. And so now I've been doing that for a year and a half. I'm confident in skill, strategy. And so, yeah, now I've added my personal bets, my betting breakdowns. There's two bets up and two betting breakdown videos up for UFC Rotterdam. Just talking about the bets I'm personally making, why I'm making them, bankroll management, strategy, things like that. People always ask me for my bets all the time. It's one of the most common requests I get. And I feel like this will just only improve the content. It is $9.99 a week now. So, the prices increase, but there's been so many people have won so much money in our community over the last year. I really feel like the price is still, there's still so much value in this package. And I hope that you guys stick with me and win some money more to come this year.
Yeah. And I really can't emphasize enough how the chat is. It is everyone supporting each other. I see you in there more now too, different times of the day. So that's always good. So don't think that you buy the package and then you just have to kind of do it all by yourself. If you have questions and you want to go to the premium chat, hop in there. I know I'm in there. A lot of the other pros are in there and people that take it serious. So I'm looking forward to an awesome end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a community and we're all here to help each other. It's not just me force feeding people picks and hey, if we win, we all have the same exact lineup. We're all learning, improving, getting better week by week. And we know this is a long-term game. So join the community.
Absolutely. Let's hop in to UFC Rotterdam fight. What is it? Fight night 100 and who the hell knows? They don't even keep track anymore. It is exclusive to the Fight Pass this week. So let's kick it off with the preliminary matchups where we see an interesting matchup of Thibaut Gaudi versus Andrew Holbrook. Andrew Holbrook comes in at 8,800 minus 175 favorite. Thibaut Gaudi comes in at 7,400, a plus 155 underdog. How much chinny chin chin could a fight have if a chinny chin could chin?
Yeah, that's interesting breakdown right there. But this is really just a case of who's worse. The loser of this fight should leave the UFC. Probably both guys shouldn't be in the UFC. Gaudi is 0-3. He's been knocked out twice and submitted once. He was knocked out in like 10 seconds. Holbrook is 2-2 in the UFC. He's won two split decisions, and he's also been knocked out in the first minute in the other two fights. Neither of these guys have good chins, so that interests me from a fantasy perspective because, I mean, obviously there's two sides. We can target guys who are great finishers, but we can also target guys who simply aren't very durable, and neither of these guys are durable. So while I can't say Goody's an elite finisher or Holbrook's an elite finisher, it's likely someone's going to get hurt just because both are not durable at all. And it's likely someone's going to get finished. So personally, I'm on Gaudi more. I like his price. I think people are just going to ignore him. Well, maybe not ignore him, but he'll be overlooked because he's 0-3. There's nothing really to look at. I'm fairly confident he's the better striker here. So if the fight plays out on the feet, I think Gaudi will have the better chance to get the knockout. Holbrook is more of a grappler, but he generally doesn't get takedowns of his own. He generally gets taken down and then like goes for a choke or goes for a leg lock and somehow scrapes out rounds that way. Gaudi fought Aubin Mercier and defended well enough that I think he can defend takedowns here. And if he can defend takedowns, I think he's probably going to hurt Holbrook and probably put him away. So I definitely like Gaudi in GPP. I'll have some Holbrook too, because even though he's not a great striker, he could just land a punch and put Gaudi out. So I think he'll be more popular than Gaudi, but it's a first fight of the night. Definitely one I want to target in tournaments.
Yeah, for sure. GPP special here. I have kind of flip-flopped back and forth because of the chin issues on both, but I think this is basically the line is close anyways, and I do like the value on Gaudi. Holbrook may have the grappling, like you said, but it's kind of like emergency grappling. You know, it's like last second, let's take him down. And I think that Gaudi can hold his own and stay on the feet. So I think that he is one of the few dogs that I actually would say I like. I don't know if you can really like him, but definitely GPP upside. Not going to touch it in cash, even for salary relief.
I would consider Gaudi in cash, but only if it fits. Just, I don't know. There's not many underdogs this week where I'm like, wow, this guy's a great value. This guy's probably going to win and score well. So, like, I don't know. Gaudi makes sense to me if he fits, but I'm certainly not going to force either guy into a cash team.
Yeah, Gaudi is at the Jackson Wink camp now, so hopefully he has gotten a little bit better striking and shown some improvement and going to be able to show some improvement. Let's move on to the next fight where I'm going to try. All right, we got names. First night back, I am going to just go for this, okay?
Do it.
Abdul Karim Adilov versus Bohan Mihailovic.
Good enough.
That was more difficult.
I would have said Mihailovic. I don't know if that's right, but it's close enough what you said.
There's silence. Oh, God, silent letters. Let's just go with Adilov, 9,500 favorite, a minus – wow, I was looking earlier, minus 720 favorite. versus Bohan's 6,700 plus 510 now. We have Adeloff making his debut, Russian, huge favorite here. Can he pay it off, Brett?
Yeah, I'll try to make this short and sweet. Adeloff is my favorite play in all formats. He's priced that way for a reason, and it's not necessarily because he's great. He's pretty good. But Mihailovic shouldn't be in the UFC. He's not a UFC-level fighter. He's basically being brought in to lose fights. He's been knocked out by Francis Ngannou, knocked out by Joachim Christensen, and Christensen has been finished in all three of his other fights. So Mihailovic, all he really does is duck his head and throw these like winging punches. That's pretty much his game. Adeloff is like a typical Chechen fighter, like good submission grappler. He's a big favorite for a reason. I think there's a big skill gap here. My biggest concern is that he takes Mihailovic down immediately and submits him in a minute and scores like 96 points. We've seen that happen before, and that's honestly a concern, but the line's too big. He's minus 400 to win inside the distance. I think he's a clear cash play and a clear tournament play. Will he be the highest scoring fighter? I don't know for sure, but I'm certainly willing to invest in him because even if he doesn't score 120, he should score fairly well. So I like him. I'm going to take Adeloff all day, and I really don't want any money on Mihailovic.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm thinking. I want no piece of Bojan. He's, like you said, he wings these punches. I would like to say he was durable, but he certainly wasn't against Ngannou. And I think that the upside is interesting for Adeloff. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to set that 130. Like you said, he may just steamroll. And ownership's going to be huge on him. So, I mean, in GPPs, I'm not saying avoid him because he's a bad play. I think ownership-wise, that was this, you know, my kind of contrarian look is, you know, different places in that. But definitely going to be probably a good cash game play. And this top tier is pretty, I would say, pretty elite this week. So
pretty loaded.
I'm definitely interested to see where ownership's go in that direction. But on this particular one, I don't even think we need to talk much more about it. Let's just move it along. Let's get on to the next fight where we see Zabit Magomedsparov versus Mike Santiago. All right, you got a Russian versus an American here in completely different, you know, worlds. You got 9,300 for Zabit minus 440 favorite. Santiago coming off that Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, 6,900, a plus 350 underdog. I don't really like him coming back this fast, but he did look good on the Contender Series. What's your thought on this one?
Yeah, I want a piece of all the guys in the top tier, and Magomed Sharapov, I'll call him Zabit, is no different. He's 12-1. He's a legit prospect. Another Chechen prospect. He prefers to keep the fight standing. What I don't like about him from a fantasy perspective is he's very patient. He's just kind of like laid back, like, let's see what you got. I'm gonna wait for you to do you, and then I'll do me. And a lot of his matchups play out where his opponent is doing all the offense early on, and then, you know, he's also pretty tall, skinny, so he gets held against the cage. Fighters try to take him down. He's got good defense, good balance, etc. And then he kind of beats them up standing, but he's just not very aggressive. And so I think Santiago's clearly going to be the aggressor here. I think Santiago's probably going to try and take him down. Maybe he does, but more than likely there will be clinches against the cage for a while. And then either Zabit will kind of pick him apart on the feet more and more as the fight goes, or it'll be fairly close on the feet. I'm not too sure, only because of the volume and aggression. So it's concerning from a fantasy perspective. I want guys who push the pace, who go forward, who land in volume, who get takedowns. I don't know if Zabit is that guy, and especially at the pricing tier he's at, I'd obviously much rather pay up to Prezeris and Edilov. I still think he's worth targeting because he's got good inside distance line. But, like, Santiago's fought 28 times. He's only been knocked out once. I don't know that this is a lock for a finish. So,
I think he'll get a short layoff or no? Concerns about it? Or not the short time in between coming right off a fight?
Yeah, I mean, I have concerns, but honestly, if he wasn't coming in on short notice, I don't think it would really change my opinion of the fight. So I think I would like some exposure to Zabit, but I'll be probably underweight to the field on him. And I will probably have a small amount of exposure to Santiago just because he's going to be very aggressive. And I do kind of have long-term concerns about Zabit, his physicality, his aggression. I think he might give away rounds kind of by accident. We'll see. Once he fights in the UFC a few times, we'll gather more data. But Santiago looked good again, you know, in Dana White's show, and showed that he's a capable fighter at the very least. So I don't think this is a wash by any means, especially early. Yeah.
No, I definitely agree with a lot of the things there. I think that Zabit does use his he's going to be definitely big. He's big for the division too. I think he'll
be tall.
Yeah, definitely. It's -160. I saw the props were slow to come out for the inside the distance, but he's -160 to finish inside, so that's pretty good. Definitely going to be targeting it. I wasn't too concerned about the inactivity, but I do think if Mike pushes it, then that just plays into his hand. So it's an interesting GPP play for sure. I'm looking at it. I don't know. Not much else. I think Santiago is a no-go.
That's fair enough.
Let's move on to a next fight where we see Francis Marboroso versus Alexander Rakic. We see Rakic come in at 8,500, a -135 favorite versus Barroso's 7,700, a +115 underdog. Got a veteran of the sport here versus a newcomer again. Brett loves Barroso. He can never get him right. So just play the opposite of what he says, which he's going to say right now for us.
Yeah, I never know what to do with them. We were talking before the show. It's like, oh, we're pretty sure he's going to beat Stewart, and then Stewart wins via TKO headbutt. And it's like, oh, God damn it. And then they rematch. It's like, well, we already saw the fight. I guess Stewart's going to win by TKO. And then Barroso goes out there and lands like 7 takedowns. And there's been several other occasions where, you know, against Mutopchich was like barely a favorite, but DraftKings decided to price him dirt cheap. So we're like, okay, great value. Barroso smokes him. It's just, I don't like him. I don't like watching him. I don't like analyzing him. He's just tough to peg. I do think this is more or less a striker versus grappler matchup. Rakic is a pretty solid kickboxer. I think if this fight stays standing, he's going to have a pretty significant edge. But he's fought pretty low level competition on the Austrian regional scene. So it's kind of hard to tell what level he's at. And I have seen him taken down a few times, which gives me concern because Barroso, at the very least, will rush you into the cage, hold you there, and then try to get some body lock takedowns. So my gut says that Rakic's takedown defense and overall grappling is not at a UFC level, and I think Barroso is the guy to take advantage of that, but my confidence level is like none. So I would like a small amount of exposure to both guys, because if this fight stays standing, I can see Rakic lighting him up on the feet. His inside distance prop is fairly good. Where is it at?
Yeah, they just came out.
So +145. It's not bad. Barroso plus 228 is not bad either, and he has the grappling potential, so I hate him, but I'll probably throw him in a couple lineups. It's just really, it's a tough fight to predict without knowing the level of grappling that Rakic has. So we're guessing on that front. If you have a strong take, then you should go with that. But my take is that I think it's probably not great. And that's why I'm getting some exposure to Bohoso, but we'll see. Really,
Austria is not really known as a hotbed or a good place for MMA. So I just don't know what his training level would be. So that is concerning. I think there's just really two ways it goes down. Rakic early, comes out aggressive, knocks Bohoso out. That's probably a likely outcome, very likely. But I do like Bohoso. Rakic has never been to a decision. Bohoso knows how to win a decision in the UFC. He's got the experience behind him. This is scary to say it, but I like Bohoso in this matchup. I think he can steal a second and third round, even if Rakic outstrikes him in the first or whatever he does in the first. I think he can be able to make a decision here. And at 7,700, there's not a lot of dogs we like on this card. So I definitely do like Bohoso. Confidence level not high.
Yeah, I think that's a good take.
Yep. But definitely target it. Definitely target that one. Let's move on to the next fight where we see Rostam Habiloff versus Desmond Green. We have Habiloff at a 9,100 favorite, minus 310 favorite versus Green's 7,100 underdog at 255. Habiloff wrestling a lot. I see a lot of people high on Green. Sorry, not like that. I kind of like Habiloff in this. I know a lot of people are liking Green. So what do you like on this one?
Yeah, it's a bit odd. I don't know if it's bias or what. I think a lot of times when people see an underdog and he wins and then he's an underdog again, it's like, oh, he just won as an underdog. Like, can't believe he's an underdog again. Like, wow. And it's different from a betting perspective than a DraftKings perspective, but I really have no interest in Green. He's a very low output striker, as is Khabibov. Green is only against Josh Emmett. He landed 57 significant strikes in 3 rounds, 1 takedown. I don't really see him having more success against Khabibov than he did against Josh Emmett. So I find it unlikely that he's going to top really 70 points, even in a win. I think it's plausible he gets the win, but I feel like he's going to need the wrestling advantage against Khabibov, unless he just completely stays on the outside and scrapes out 2 rounds with low output striking. I feel like there's got to be wrestling exchanges. That's what Khabibov does. He's
a grinder.
He's landed 4 takedowns, 2, 6, 6, 6. You know, he lands a lot of takedowns, and that's how he wins fights. And so I feel like whoever has the wrestling advantage is probably going to win, because there's likely to be several wrestling exchanges. And I've seen nothing from Green to tell me that his wrestling is better than Khabibov's. Maybe Khabibov isn't great, but at the very least, he's, you know, clearly out wrestled decent guys like Chris Wade, Sago, Norman Park. He took Benson Henderson down 6 times. There's nothing from Green to tell me that he's going to win this fight clearly or score well. And I think he's going to be fairly popular. So maybe not like 35%, but maybe in the high 20s. And so, you know, even if Green wins, that's fine. I don't think I'm going to have much of any exposure to him. I'd rather take chances on lower owned guys who people are just kind of writing off, who have higher upside if they will win. I don't know what to do about Khabibov, because he's in this range with Renault, Taisumov, Magomed Shapirov. Those four, who I all think could score highly, but I really don't know which one it will be or which one or two. So, I mean, really all we need to know to target Khabibov is that he can land 6 takedowns. But at the same time, it's like, I would like to have some exposure to Taisumov and Zabit and Renault. So I don't I don't know exactly how to maneuver that upper tier. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think it may be, and this is a weird situation because you have a guy that has the grappling for the DK points that we love. It may be almost like a fade for me. And I kind of just talked it out in my head was that you have, you know, Rostelum, it's going to be difficult for him to score the 90 points, you know, the 10X that we were kind of looking for. And Green does not necessarily score very high against his last opponent. He had 64 in a win. So that's, you know, 25 points for a win. So I'm concerned. I'm concerned about both guys even having potential to score high in this. But you do have the safety net of the takedowns for Rostelum and the passes and advances. So it's intriguing. It's definitely intriguing. But I'm not sure if I'm going to have a ton of either guy for sure. And I do hope that people take Desmond Green, and I hope he's on his back.
Yeah, so, I think this is a fight if you're making like 1-3 lineups, you don't need to target. I mean, yeah. Maybe it screws you, but you really don't need to target. If you're making 20 lineups, I think you should probably have a small amount of exposure to Kopylov just to cover your base. And I think he might be lower owned than Zabit and Taisimov, but he could, you know, get a few takedowns, take the back and get a submission. Maybe it's not crazy out of realm of possibility. But yeah, it'll be a small amount of Kopylov or pass for me.
Same here. Yeah. He just kind of likes to control on the ground, and that is kind of a little bit concerning. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the next fight where we see Michel Prezeris versus Mad Burnell. We have Prezeris come in at 9,400 on DraftKings, a minus 420 favorite versus Burnell's 6,800 underdog at plus 335. Are we going to take the tractor here? Is he going to just steamroll Burnell here, or we're going for the newcomer in Mads Burnell?
I like Prezeris. I think he'll be popular. Burnell's an interesting guy. Like, everything that I've seen from him, I've liked, but he's fought absolute nobodies. And it's funny because he actually fought one guy who's 20-4, and I'm like, oh wow, this guy's 20-4. And then you go look at that guy's record, and he's literally fighting guys who are 0-10 or like, 1-3, 0-4, things like that. And so everything Burnell's been able to do on the regional scene, he's had success. He just stands there, you know, kind of throws a jab or two, and then he's like, I'm going to take you down. And then he runs, grabs a double leg, throws the guy down, holds him down. Pretty much all of his success in the grappling comes in transition. He's really good at head and arm chokes. And I saw he had two wins by Japanese necktie, which is like my favorite submission in MMA. I always call for it because you need the vice grip, which is a transition to the dars. But MMA fighters always go for the dars, where the Japanese necktie, you just need the vice grip, and then you can whatever hook an ankle, throw on the etc. And just being able to go for that move and complete it like tells me that his grappling is at a fairly high level. Like, he understands the game. And so I want to root for him. What's he going to do? Take Prezeris down though? Prezeris is a brick house. His only losses are to Kevin Lee, who's now fighting for a title, and
Tiago.
Yeah. Tiago. What's his face? Paulo Tiago. He beat Taisimov, who's coming up on this card. He beat Gilbert Burns, ran through Berkman. It's just, I don't know exactly how good Burnell is, but I suspect he'll look for the takedown like he always does. He'll get stuffed, and then Prezeris will get a bunch of takedowns himself, maybe a submission late, maybe knock him out. I think the only way he loses is if Prezeris just gasses or if he gets caught in transition, which I don't think those are, I mean, maybe likely enough to throw Burnell in a lineup, but not any more than that. And I think Prezeris is going to be a popular guy, one of my favorite fighters on the card. And I think he's fairly safe to win.
Yep, I am all same thing as you on this. I love Prezeris in this matchup. We got to remember that Burnell's coming in on short notice too, so we don't know what shape he's going to be coming in. It's a great matchup. stylistically for Zaris to take advantage anywhere and pretty much have do whatever he wants in the fight, I'm pretty sure. So I'm probably going to be pretty overweight on Prezeris and be happy with it, hopefully.
Do you think he'll come in significantly under-owned compared to Edilov?
Yes, I personally do. I think people are going to pay up for the knockout. And I don't think it's necessarily the best play because, as we were saying, we don't know if he could just get it right away or if he could just sub him right away. It's concerning in those regards. But I think that Prezeris has way more opportunity to score over 100 or even 110. You know, I think he's got the knockout power to knock him down and then sub him or something crazy like that. So I am happy to roster Prezeris at a lower ownership, which I predict.
Yeah, I think he'll be a lower ownership. His inside distance is plus 146 and Edilov is minus 400. So,
yeah.
But if he wins by decision, he still might score over 100, which is kind of crazy these days. But definitely a popular play, but one of my favorite plays.
Yep. Let's get to another fun matchup where we see Mirbak Taisimov versus Felipe Silva. We have Taisimov come in at 9,200, a minus 250 favorite versus Silva's 7,000 underdog at plus 210. I'm seeing some love for Silva, undefeated. You're going to go with another Russian. I see this theme. We got a lot of Russian grinders on this card. Any concerns with Taisimov? Are you going which way on this one?
I like Taisimov. he's in that range, like I said, with Renault, Kopylov, Zabit, where I want a little bit of exposure to him. The one concern I have for him is that he really hasn't fought anyone good. He's looked good in these fights against poor fighters, but I mean, you know, he's beaten Taihyun Bang. Stop me when you hear a good name. Taihyun Bang, Marcin Bandel, Anthony Christodoulou, Alon Patrick, and Demir Hadzovic. It's like, best fighter you've beaten, like, it's hard to gauge his ceiling. I think he should be better everywhere here. Silva is like a Muay Thai guy. Clearly he has decent power, can be aggressive. I think Taisimov is a more technical striker, so the longer the fight goes, he'll probably pick him apart. And I also think he can land takedowns if he chooses to. I don't know what game plan he will choose. Similar to Zabit, he's kind of patient, kind of counter-striker, which is concerning if he doesn't look for the takedown. But there's enough ability there, enough grappling potential, enough potential to win inside the distance. But I do want some exposure to Taisimov. I also don't mind Silva in that tier with Santiago, where, like, I don't think they're going to win, but, like, Silva's going to be aggressive, and, like, if he does win, it's probably going to be something crazy. So I'd rather take a chance on that than, like, go to Desmond Green with everyone else. I do think Taisimov wins the fight, though.
I agree. I think that Taisimov is the play here, but I do see a little bit of merit if you're punting, because there really aren't many dogs that we like. And Silva, very good in the clinch. I mean, great clinch game. He could land something in the clinch and take advantage of that. But the problem is Taisimov's just too smart. I think he just takes him down and controls him on the ground. And we certainly do know the safety with him and the takedowns and the advances. So I think that he is the play here. Let's move on over to the next fight where we see Darren Till versus Bohan Bolikovich. And we have Till as the 8,900 favorite, minus 190 versus Bolikovich, 7,300, plus 165. Personally, I'm already on the Darren Till train. I think he's well-rounded. He's starting to peak. And I think that people are starting to bet down Bojan a little bit, but he's able to get taken down, and I think that Till has a lot more paths to victory in this fight. Are you looking at the underdog? What are you doing in this one?
I really don't have any interest in this fight on DraftKings. What I want to target is high-paced fights with grappling potential and finishing potential, and I don't think this fight has really any of that. It shouldn't be high-paced. Till is, again, very patient, likes to sit all the way back, counter. Blachkovic is a bit more aggressive, but I don't think he's as technical as Till. So I think Till will kind of lead the exchanges, or win the exchanges, I should say. There is some grappling potential, but it's certainly not Till's first path game plan, or game plan first path to victory. It might be Bojan's. He might look for the takedown. Maybe he gets it, but I don't think he's going to win the fight that way. He really doesn't do anything. Like, what does he do in fights? He has trouble creating offense, and I think Till's just technically superior. The fight's likely to go to decision, so you know, Till's, he's not Sam Alvey, but he's in that same ballpark where it's like, yes, he could counter strike and knock Volkovic out in a minute, but like, unless that happens, he's probably not going to meet value. So I'm not really willing to pay 8.9K.
GPP only for Till for me. I mean, and personally, I think that it goes to a decision as well. So I do think it's going to be a striking affair. That's what I have down in my notes, is kind of be aware that they could be low scoring. But let's remember, Bojan was losing the last fight against Masuke. And then you saw the chicken dance thing, when that was one of the most bizarre knockouts I've ever seen, where Masuke was like dancing in the middle and he knocked him out. But he was definitely losing. So people, again, are going to be jumping on, oh, he knocked out Nico Masuke. But Masuke hadn't fought in a long time, and he was basically gassed by the third round. So I agree. I think Till basically can knock him out or strike his way to a decision, and that's not a lot I want to invest into. So, well, anything else?
No, I agree with what you said. Blachkovic could win, but like, there's really no reason to pick him to win, and there's really no reason to invest in him. Even if he scores 75 points, it's like, man, that really hurt. He scored 75 points. I'm just not willing to invest much money in that. I'd rather take chances on lower owned guys who have 100 point upside.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to another fight where we see Leon Edwards versus Brian Barberina. We have Edwards coming in at 9,000 and Barberina come in at 7,200. Edwards, -275 favorite. Barberina, +235 underdog. The line's been up and down on this particular fight. I think it's interesting. We like I kind of have a certain take on this one. What do you have on this one?
It's an interesting fight, and I hope it plays out the way I think it's going to. It's just, this is a style of matchup that I like to target, and Edwards, I've said this a bunch of times already, but he's a striker, right? That's what he's billed as, but he's a very low volume striker. But he almost never wins his fights by striking. He's turned into a wrestler, and a decent one at that. Because I mean, we have to give him credit. He's beaten, submitted Tumanov. That was an impressive win. He out wrestled Dominic Waters, and he basically out wrestled Vicente Luque as well to win two decisions there. I think he's going to have to wrestle Barberina to win this fight, and I'm just not sure he can do that consistently. Like, Barberina was taken down 12 times by Colby Covington, which shows that he can certainly be taken down, but Colby Covington had to work for these takedowns over and over and over. Barberina had to scramble to get back to his feet 11 times. And I don't know if Edwards is capable of that. So I think more than likely Barberina is going to push the pace. Sure, he could get knocked out. I think Edwards is actually the better striker, but I just think the pace of the fight, the volume, Barberina is going to win rounds on the feet, and he's never been knocked out in 17 fights. So if Edwards doesn't knock him out, I think Barberina wins over 15 minutes on the feet. And so I think Edwards will need to use his grappling to win the fight, and I just can't count on that. I'm definitely not confident in Barberina winning this fight, but the price on Barberina is so cheap.
The line is off for sure. And they both have good gas tanks too. That's the interesting thing. So it will be.
Barberina certainly does.
Yeah. Edwards. So I mean, the Luque fight, it was sloppy towards the end.
Yeah. I like Barberina. I think he's safer I think he's a fine. I think he's a good cash game play. Unlikely to get finished and a high output guy in tournaments. It's going to be more interesting because he's not likely to finish. He's probably going to be fairly popular. I still think he's one of my favorite plays dollar for dollar. Just because I think he has a decent path to victory. And I really don't have any interest in Edwards again, like Till, unless he wins by knockout in the first few minutes, he's not likely to reach value. I mean, I guess he could land several takedowns, but I'd rather just pay up $100 to Renault Khabilov or a few hundred dollars to Taisimov or Zabit.
Yeah. So you also targeting Barbarina because of the pure aggression too. He's aggressive.
The pace of the fight. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Let's move on to the next one where we see Marion Renault versus Talita Oliveira. We have Renault come in at 9,100, a -320 favorite, versus Oliveira's 7,100 on DraftKings, +260. Very late replacement for, I forget who she replaced, but Oliveira.
Jermaine Durandamy.
Oh, yeah. She's not even on my radar anymore. Although weird, I did have her against Rome, but man, that was, yeah. I think that that's going to be her scapegoat. Ooh, hand hurts. Can't fight. But yeah, let's, overall, just general thought here. Do you like to target people that are late replacements that didn't have a fight scheduled?
I mean, not really. Not specifically. I don't. I will sometimes look to target against people on short notice, but I don't look to target people on short notice. The only reason that I like Bernardo a bit is because the only thing she's going to want to do is get the takedown. And I think she's a decent wrestler and grappler, and I think Renault has some defensive holes that I think it's fairly likely Bernardo gets a takedown or two early in this fight. Now, that doesn't mean she wins the fight, but if I can go that far in my mind, I can usually get to the possibility of, okay, well, maybe she can win a couple rounds then. And I don't think anyone's going to touch her. With that said, I haven't seen any striking from her. Renault's good on the ground. So I'd be shocked if Bernardo could pass a ton of times either, but it's like, it's possible that she lands 5-6 takedowns and holds Renault down enough to win two rounds. I think that's a reasonable outcome, not one that I will pick outright, but if Bernardo is going to be under 10% owned, I'll probably take a shot on her. Renault I like as well because I don't think Bernardo is a good striker. Haven't really seen her strike at all. All of her wins are by first round submission, pretty much. And so I think as the fight goes on, if Bernardo can't get those takedowns, Renault is just going to start lighting her up on the feet. And potentially, even if she does get a takedown, Renault might submit her because she's a black belt herself.
Renault's never been subbed.
Yeah, I don't see Bernardo really submitting her. Just the takedowns worry me. But how do you think people are going to view? Do you think people are going to be heavy on Renault?
That's the other thing. I don't believe that they are. It's funny how we think alike. I think people are going to look elsewhere. They're going to look to the Russian guys because they have names. By the way, just to clarify something, I'm not sure if she got married and she changed it to Bernardo, but other sites do have her as De Oliveira, so perhaps she got married and the name was switched. So
it's a Brazilian nickname.
They have like 37 names, so it's okay.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that Renault could go overlooked in this spot, and I love the pace. She does throw almost 4 significant strikes per minute, which is awesome on the feet. I mean, it's not elite, but it's good enough to target for DraftKings. And I agree. I think that her takedown defense should be able to hold up here. The striking's terrible for Bernardo. It's very, very bad. It's just basically straights and there's not much movement. So I really, really like Renault in this matchup. I don't know. The other thing is we have two people that are 9,100, right? You know me. I love when we have that happen, because from a game theory point of view, you're going to have people that will never roster both of them, right? Like Habeloff and Renault. That's something I like to do always. We rarely get to talk about this unless we're on, but it's just one of those game theory things, right? People, if they're clicking, they're going to click one of the 9100s, not both of them. And they both have, you know, Renault's got the striking and potential maybe knockout or a late finish. And you have Habeloff, who's going to be grappling. So in this particular one, I'm probably having, in when I make GPP builds, have both of them because of, you know, Renault is going to be low and Habeloff falls in that same thing. People are going to be going up to pay. So is that a strategy that you ever look at? If you have people that are the same price, especially the higher priced people, people usually pick one.
Not specifically, but I understand what you're saying. Like I would never just plug both in if I didn't like them, but
well,
I would
in this situation.
Yeah. Probably people are not going to play both of them. And I think both won't be super high owned anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely like Renault. I think all signs point to the potential for her to have a high score. I don't know if it'll play out that way, but again, she's in that tier with Khabilov, Zabit, Taisumov, where it's like, I don't know who's going to score the highest. They all could. I want some exposure to her, but I don't want to go crazy because I don't want to just overlook the other three guys. But I do like her, and I will have a small amount of exposure to Bernardo, which will probably still be overweight to the field because no one will touch her. I think Renault should win the fight, though, unless she just gets wrestled and held down.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm definitely on Renault in this particular matchup. Let's move on to a bizarre. I can't believe that I'm saying that Zahir Bahadzadeh versus Rob Wilkinson is a co-main event.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. I mean, that's the way the 2017's been.
It's the world we live in.
Yeah, Bahadzadeh comes in at 8,300 minus 140 favorite versus Wilkinson's 7,900, a plus 120 underdog. Here's your mid-range fight you wanted, Brett. They said, we can't let one card go by without Brett getting a mid-range fight. So here it is. So which side are you on this
one? Yeah, there is really no mid-range. It's another annoying matchup, but I like Bahadzadeh. I think from what I've seen, Wilkinson fought a lot of low-level talent on the Australian regional scene. He's undefeated. I think the way I described him is he's a decent striker. He's going to look to strike, but like as soon as you start striking back, he's like, oh, I want none of this. Like I'm going to run the other way. Like I don't think he really likes to get hit. And so he may have a decent striking technique. He may be able to land some punches, but as soon as Bahadzadeh starts hitting him, he's not going to want to strike. Bahadzadeh, faster hands, powerful hands. He's a good striker, very experienced striker, knockout threat. Mm-hmm. I think the longer this fight stays standing, the better chance Bahadzadeh will have to win and to hurt Wilkinson and put him out. Wilkinson, in one of his regional fights, he landed like 8 takedowns in the first 2 rounds. He was just nonstop aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. And that's scary because I don't want to fade him. Because if he wins, that's probably how he's going to win here. He's going to be like, I don't want to strike. I have to wrestle. And he's going to land 6, 7, 8 takedowns because he's not a great wrestler. Probably not going to keep Bahadzadeh down. So that's scary. But I think the most likely outcome is Bahadzadeh has decent enough takedown defense. He's going to stuff the takedowns, probably hurt Wilkinson early, and then kind of pick him apart and probably get the finish. So I like Bahadzadeh more because I think that's what's going to happen. But kind of like Bahoso, I think potentially the odds are close. This is like almost a 50-50 fight according to Vegas. If Wilkinson wins, he's going to get several takedowns. And so maybe I'll throw him in a lineup or two. But my official pick will be Bahadzadeh probably by finish.
Yeah, Wilkinson does have an 8-inch reach advantage here. Usually for me, I kind of look at like 5 inches as a threshold of can the person utilize that advantage or not. I'm not really sure that the 8-inch reach comes into play on this bout at all. Like you said, Bahadzadeh can close the distance and he's got knockout power. And I believe later he gets, you know, a little bit stronger, I guess you could say. And the one concern is, Saeir does get taken down. He kind of averages like 2 takedowns per a fight getting taken down, which is a concern. But I do think that before that even happens, I think Barzada will light him up on the feet. This fight is taking place at welterweight, which is both of them moving up for this particular bout, which is something to look at.
Middleweight or welterweight? I'm showing 185.
They moved up to middleweight welterweight. Okay, yep, that was it. But yeah, we've seen Wilkinson rock before. He's able to fight through it, but I do think Barzada, probably a late finish, probably a late knockout. That's my official prediction for this one. But let's get on to a awesome matchup. I think when I saw this one, I was like, these are two monsters of the ring. This is like the freak show fights that we love. It's not even a freak show though, because there's such high level talent. Let's look at the main event where we see Stephen Struve versus Alexander Volkov. Volkov, the small favorite, 8,400 on DraftKings, -120. And Struve coming in at 7,800, a +100 underdog. Struve, hometown guy, skyscraper. Both guys, basically, 7 feet tall? They're going to be towering over the ring when they get in there. Both guys have great inside the distance props. It's a close fight. Which way are you looking on this one?
Well, I was leaning Struve early, but like honestly, it's really a toss up. I there's really no way for me to be confident in either guy. Both guys have really big holes in their game. I could see it playing out for either fighter. Volkov, I haven't really been high on him. He's fought Roy Nelson and Tim Johnson, two smaller guys who are just going to bull rush him and try to take him down. It's quite the different matchup for Struve, who I've heard this said both ways, but yes, Struve is normally used to fighting guys smaller than Volkov, but at the same time, Volkov's never fighting guys that are bigger than him and have longer reaches. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Volkov reacts to fighting a larger guy, which he's probably never have in his career. I can see Volkov winning this fight with his volume striking. I can see Struve winning the fight with striking and some semblance of power, potentially getting the fight down. If Struve gets the fight to the ground, that's where he's going to have his biggest advantage. I can't really say that that's a likely outcome because he's not a good wrestler. He's 7 feet tall. But this is heavyweight. Both guys have enough power where, even if I thought Volkov was a slightly better technician on the feet, I still think Struve has more power, could hurt him, vice versa. Struve's been knocked out plenty of times, albeit to good fighters. So really, I can't say that I'm confident in either guy, and I would never tell someone, oh, you need to roster this guy in 8 out of your 10 lineups. I'll probably be split. I think both guys have good inside distance props. It'll probably be a high-paced fight, at least at the start. So I'm going to get my exposure to both guys. I will leave a couple lineups without them because – of in case it kind of drags the last 3 rounds, it's like a clinch fest. That's not a crazy outcome. I'll lean Struve just because I think he's a bit more well-rounded, and I'd like to see Volkov in this matchup. It's really with no confidence though.
Yeah, he can basically prove us wrong, Volkov. I'm on Struve as well. I do think he's got better striking, Volkov does, but Struve has better ground game. Again, like you were just alluding to, the end of the fight could be a clinch game against the fence where they're just kind of, wrestling for position. I mean, that's what happens in a lot of these skyscraper type fights, they're just huge. They end up towards the cage. It's like a magnet.
Yeah. Volkov still landed over 100 significant strikes in 3 rounds. So even if it goes to decision, I still think it can pay off price, especially in the mid range.
Yeah, for sure. That pretty much does it for UFC Rotterdam. Looking forward to pay-per-view next week. DJ looking to break the record. Any last thoughts?
No, I mean, there's so many newcomers on this card. I would say probably spread your exposure out. There's no way to be so confident in like 1 or 2 fighters on this card, in my opinion. I think it's a card to kind of spread your exposure, make many lineups. That's how I'm personally attacking it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking to pretty much play GPP on this card. And I look forward to the next card because no Vegas odds are out yet for it, but we have salaries, so you can still build for the pay-per-view. I'm looking forward to making some money this week. Hope you are too. Let's close up. You take it.
All right. Thanks for watching, everyone. We'll see you guys next week.
Later.